Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and our goal is to help members of the military community succeed in their post-service career. Today is episode number 315 about how to become a better storyteller with Paul Smith.
Storytelling helps people make decisions. And there's been a lot of research that's gone into that to helping us understand that it turns out human beings make largely subconscious emotional decisions in that emotional processing part of the brain. And then we justify and rationalize those decisions in a more logical thinking part of the brain, which is the conscious thinking part of the brain. So we leave decisions thinking we've made them for these very rational, logical reasons. But the truth is our subconscious reptilian brain kind of decided a few nanoseconds earlier what we want to think and do, and we've just justified it rationally later.
Well, normally on the show, I interview military veterans about their civilian career, what they do, how they got there, and advice for other veterans seeking to do the same. Today, however, is a skills episode where I meet with a world-class expert on a topic relevant to our listeners, regardless of their career path. And the topic may surprise you because today is all about storytelling. We talk about why storytelling may make or break your success as a leader, interviewer, and even parent. We talk about how storytelling is one of the most efficient and lasting ways to influence people and organizations. Special thanks to Mike Vigliola from episode 308 for making the introduction to Paul. Normally, when I start the interview, I read the person's bio as part of the interview. I wanted to have as much time as possible for my conversation with Paul, so I wanted to record that as part of the introduction right now. So here's why I think that Paul makes such a great speaker about this topic. Paul is one of the world's leading experts in business storytelling, one of Inc. magazine's top 100 leadership speakers of 2018, a storytelling coach, a best-selling author of the books The 10 Stories Great Leaders Tell, Lead with a Story, Sell with a Story, Parenting with a Story, and 4 Days with Kenny Tedford. His work has been featured in the Wall Street Journal, Time Magazine, Forbes, Fast Company, The Washington Post, PR News, CIO Magazine, Investors Business Daily, Market Research Magazine, The American Banking Journal, and London's Edge Magazine, among others. In his 20 years with Procter & Gamble, Paul held leadership positions in both research and finance functions, and most recently served as Director of Consumer and Communications Research. Prior to Procter & Gamble, Paul was a consultant for Arthur Andersen & Company. His keynote speaking and training clients include international giants like Google, Hewlett-Packard, Bayer Medical, Walmart, Kaiser Permanente, Ford Motor, Luxottica, and Procter & Gamble, among dozens of others. Paul holds a bachelor's degree in economics and an MBA from the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. He lives with his wife and 2 sons in the Cincinnati suburb of Mason, Ohio. As always, at beyondtheuniform.org, you'll find show notes that include a text transcript of this interview. It includes links to everything we discuss, including Paul's 5 different books. And we also have over 300 episodes just like this. I encourage you to sign up for our newsletter to learn more about upcoming events and special offers. With that, let's dive into my conversation with Paul. Well, joining me today in Cincinnati, Ohio, my guest is Paul Smith. Paul, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
And I gave listeners a little bit of your bio in the intro, but I just wanted to say before we dive in, storytelling is something in 300 plus interviews that comes up a lot because there are interviews, there are constant situations where veterans are needing to quote unquote sell themselves into a role or organization. And so when we learned about your background, Paul, we were really excited to have a conversation with you and delve deeper into your expertise. So let me just maybe start with, normally on the show we have veterans and you yourself are not a veteran, but I was just curious, why it was important for you to be willing to speak to the veteran community.
Yeah, good question. A couple of obvious ones for me. My father's a veteran. He served in the Navy during the Korean War. And I suppose almost everybody has some amount of respect and admiration and appreciation for those of you who do wear the uniform. But probably the main reason is just, why wouldn't veterans want the benefit of being better storytellers? I mean, I talk to people in all kinds of walks of life. I talk to working mom groups, and I talk to marketing and sales groups and executive leadership teams. And this week I was interviewed by a journalist from a firefighter magazine and a magazine specifically for trucking company executives. I mean, you know, storytelling is really the kind of thing that everyone can benefit from. And gosh, why wouldn't veterans want to avail themselves of that skill set too?
And obviously storytelling is a passion of yours. You've written five books that are predominantly about storytelling. Why should listeners be interested in this? Why is this important in our lives today?
I think it probably always has been important. I think there was a long period of time where people kind of forgot the benefits of and the importance of storytelling. But in the last 20 or 30 years, I think there's been a resurgence of recognized interest in the subject. And there are a dozen reasons that I lay out in my books, but I think the main one is that storytelling helps people make decisions. And there's been a lot of research that's gone into that to helping us understand that it turns out human beings make largely subconscious emotional decisions in that emotional processing part of the brain. And then we justify and rationalize those decisions in a more logical thinking part of the brain, which is the conscious thinking part of the brain. So we leave decisions thinking we've made them for these very rational, logical reasons. But the truth is our subconscious reptilian brain kind of decided a few nanoseconds earlier what we want to think and do, and we've just justified it rationally later. So if you want to influence what people think and feel and do, in other words, leadership, turns out you need to speak to both parts of the brain, and stories just happen to be an exceptional vehicle for reaching that subconscious part of the brain.
I love that. And as you say that, I realize, you know, we've featured so many different career paths on the show. And when you put it like that, it's like, oh man, if I'm a product manager, there's the storytelling about the product. If I'm in marketing, there's the marketing story. If I'm in politics, there's all of these storytelling aspects. And you touched on something I was going to ask about, which is you mentioned leadership. And I was curious to go a little bit deeper there of like, you know, how does storytelling relate to leadership?
Yeah. So, well, that is the job of leaders, I think, is influencing what people think, feel, and do, right? If I had to encapsulate it, you're trying to influence one of those three things and probably all of them. Right. And mostly because you're trying to influence what they do. You need the organization to do what it is that you as the leader have decided, you know, they need to do. But in order to do that, the old school way of getting people to do what the leader wants them to do is just to boss them around. Right. You wag your finger at them and say, look, I'm the boss. OK, you need to go do this and this and this and this and this. That's go do it. Mm-hmm. Well, that's, you know, that can and does work in the military. All right. It doesn't work nearly as well in corporate America, right? And probably your veterans find that out very quickly when they become veterans and are no longer actively serving. They get out in the real world, the corporate world, and they realize that just telling people what to do doesn't happen nearly as well as it does in the military, where people have to do what you say, right? And so you need to lead them there through influencing what they think and feel. Right, because that's how people decide what they're going to do, and stories are that vehicle to get into people's hearts and minds to convince them to do what it is that you want them to do.
And one of the things I was excited to learn about is, you know, when I think of my time in the military, I think of the late night mid watches and the ability of most of the people I worked with to tell incredible stories. But you've done a lot of work. I almost view it as dissecting this. And you had mentioned about 8 questions to be able to answer and how to create a surprise ending. Could you walk through and kind of teach us about the structure of good stories?
Yeah, so there are a lot of structures, story structures you could choose that different people have advocated over the years. What I find works best with leaders, and some of them are very complex, by the way. You know, Joseph Campbell popularized the hero's journey storytelling structure that you may have heard of, that a lot of Hollywood folks like to use. Well, that's a 17-step plot structure, and that's just the plot. There's also other parts that you'd have to tell. Anyway, what I've realized in working with executives is, instead of talking about the context and the challenge and the conflict and the resolution and these things that sound a little bit more academic, that if you were going to study, fiction writing or how to become, a creative novelist or something, those are the more academic, literary parts that you would study. What's easier for business executives to get their minds around, or leaders in general, is just, what are the questions my story needs to answer, right? And I think there are 8 questions a story needs to answer, and here they are. So the first one is, why should I bother listening to the story? Okay, like, you've got to answer that question first, or your audience might not listen to your story. All right, you got to give them a good reason in the first 10 or 15 seconds to listen to your story, or they might just walk away. All right, once you've done that, then you've earned the right to answer the next 5 questions, and that's these. Where and when did it take place? Who's the main character and what did they want? What was the problem or opportunity they ran into? What did they do about it? And how did it turn out in the end? All right. So those are the next 5 questions. And that should sound like the logical flow of a story, right? But if you're doing the math, there's still 2 left. So that is, what did you learn, or what should you have learned from this story? And what should I go do now? Me, the person listening to the story. That's your opportunity to make a recommendation. So those middle 5 are really the story, starting from where and when it happened all the way down to how did it turn out in the end. The question at the beginning and the ones at the end are the way that you get into a story and get people interested, and then the way you make sure that they go act on the story at the end.
I love that, because as you're going through that, I'm thinking, on one extreme of a TED talk or just a generic presentation, but I'm also thinking of like a hiring career interview process, where it seems like the implied what to do next is to give me a job offer. But I love that you kind of end with that, this is what I learned. Like, it's kind of packaging up in a bow. And I also love that you start with, like, you have to, I like that mindset of, you have to earn the right to tell them those next 5 things. And I think especially with people's attention spans so short and so many demands on our time, it's like, it sounds like it's like 10 or 15 seconds to really draw them in and have them leaning forward to listen to the rest of the arc.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. In fact, the entire story is really no more than 2 or 3 minutes long. So you got that first 10 or 15 seconds to get their attention and get them interested in listening to your story. But if your stories last 7, 8, 9, 10, 15 minutes, it's probably something wrong. So these are intended to be short, digestible leadership stories. It's not a whole speech or presentation that you're going to give. These are individual stories.
And one of the challenges that I've seen in a lot of these interviews that I've done is that I think, especially when someone first gets out of the military, there's almost like a thought of winging it on interviews. And they're almost like thinking about the answer to the question for the first time when they're across from the hiring manager. Mm-hmm. And what comes out to me is that, probably most stories are 10 to 15 minutes. And the way that it gets to be 2 minutes long is through a lot of practice. And I'm wondering if you have any advice for people about how to practice, how to actually get a story that might be unwieldy and actually get it to be better and more powerful.
Yeah, so first of all, you're right. Most people just wing it when it comes to storytelling. And that's the first mistake. I think we assume that anybody can just tell a story and it's fine. Or, there are some people who are natural born storytellers and I'm just not one. So that's just too bad for me. And that's just not true. Storytelling is like any other art form. There are people who are naturally gifted at it and people who are not. And for example, I'm not a naturally gifted musician, but I bet if I wanted to learn to play the guitar, I bet I could learn, right? And what would I do? I'd go take guitar lessons from somebody who knew how to play the guitar, right? I wouldn't just buy a guitar and start strumming on it, right? Mm-hmm. So it's the same with storytelling. You don't just wing it. learn from somebody who knows how they're doing it, knows how to do it right, which means take a class, you know, watch some YouTube videos, read a book, you know, that's what I do for a living, is teach people how to tell better stories. And so there are ways to do it. So before you go practice, learn what to practice, right? Learn the right methods. And the way to get the story from that 15-minute long, boring, rambling story down to a 2 or 3 minute succinct story is to follow the structure that I just talked about, the 8 questions. Answer the 8 questions and answer them in that order. And if your stories are longer than 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes, odds are you're answering more than those 8 questions. So I actually have people in classes write down the answer to the 8 questions. So I give it, here are the 8 questions, and there's a little box next to each question. Just in bullet point form, write down the answer to the question. That is now the outline of your story. Now you need to turn that into full sentences, but you'll do that naturally. People can naturally create a sentence out of a bullet point, but that's your story. And if your story is still too long, the advice is go into each of those boxes and start deleting the least important things, but don't delete everything in one box. And the reason is because now you've got one whole question that's not answered at all. So now you have an incomplete story. So it'd be far better to take a little bit out of all 8 boxes than just, well, let me just cut out all the stuff in the middle and I'll just get to the end. Cause you know, I'm an action oriented leader. I want to, you know, get to the action or get to the result and get to my recommendation. Okay. But now you're not doing storytelling. You're doing bossing around again, right? You want to tell a story. You have to have all the questions answered, even if it's short answers.
And what comes through for me on this is I was on submarines, which is probably the far extreme of procedures. But I think listeners, regardless of where they're serving in the military, they have more than their fair share of procedures or standing operating procedures. And what I appreciate about what you're saying is like you're teaching us the procedure for telling a story. And there is a structure, there are rules, there are ways to do this. And I hope for listeners that makes you relax a little bit and breathe easy. Like this is just one more thing, one more skill that you can learn and apply and practice and get better at. And it's not, there are not storytellers and non-storytellers. Like anyone can hone this skill set.
Yeah, that's a good observation. And I would probably call these guidelines instead of rules, because it is an art form. You know, you can not follow them perfectly and still have a decent story, but they're good guidelines to follow. I suspect folks in the military, you've got to have rules and regulations and protocols that you follow, or people can die, right? So you have to follow these rules. Storytelling is a little bit more of an art than that, but definitely having the guidelines help.
And you said something about a surprise ending. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. So, well, it's probably no surprise to you that a surprise ending is an important part of any good story, right? You love the surprise ending in the movies you watch or the, you know, novels that you read. But surprises, especially a surprise ending, plays an important role in a leadership story too, but for a very different reason. So it's not just because it makes the story more interesting, although it does that as well. Surprises literally makes your story more memorable to your audience so that they'll remember it and remember the wisdom in it and remember to go do what you want them to do. And the reason it does that is based on the physiology of how memories are formed in the human brain. So it turns out memories are not formed, you know, instantaneously when something happens. It turns out there's a period of time called the memory consolidation period. And it's from a few seconds to a few minutes to sometimes a few hours after something happens, while it's kind of being rendered, processed in the brain before it gets into short-term memory. And during that period of time, the memory is vulnerable to either being lost, like if you get your head hit in a car accident or a football injury and you get a concussion, people lose that memory entirely. And that's why people often don't remember the accident when they get a concussion. But during that period of time, it can also be enhanced. And it can be enhanced when a little bit of adrenaline gets released in your system. That adrenaline literally, biologically, physiologically makes that memory consolidation process faster and more efficient. So you remember things better with that little adrenaline in your system. So the surprise ending triggers the release of adrenaline such that everything that happens then at the end of that story, or that's still in memory consolidation, when that release happens, will be remembered better. So there's a very practical reason to add it to a leadership story.
I love that. I'm thinking just evolutionary. I can see why when our system is flooded with adrenaline, it sounds like our mind is like, hey, take this in, remember this, this is important.
Yeah.
I love how it seems like you're almost giving a hack to people of like, look, this is the way people's bodies work. You can kind of hack into that by creating this tension, that surprise, you can ingrain it. And there's so many distractions today. You want your story, your advice, your guidance, your impression to be memorable. I'm sure you have a ton of these, but I'm curious, you know, you must have so many examples of good storytelling and bad storytelling. And I'm just curious, either examples or kind of representative traits of those to help people distinguish between the two.
Yeah. I'll give you examples. So typically a bad story is bad because it's not even a story. It's just advice. And people think that they're telling a story because something in their narrative mentions that something happened or I'm relying on my experience. So this is a story and it's really not a story. For example, you might hear somebody say something like, you know, look, kid, I've been in this business for 30 years and, you know, here's what I've learned about leadership. Sometimes you really just need to go with your gut and make a decision fast and figure it out later. And if you made a mistake, you know, apologize and move on. But that's really what it takes to be successful. And they'll say something like that. A very well-meaning leader will give that kind of advice and think that they've told this great story. Well, no, you gave a great piece of advice, but you didn't tell any story. So the way to give that piece of advice with a story, in fact, the example I give you is actually from a guy you know, Mike Figliola. I think you had him on your show earlier, right?
Yeah, very recently.
Yeah, good. Okay, so I'm going to tell one of his stories from his experience in the Army. So he's a West Point guy, as you remember, and one of his first leadership experiences was being a tank platoon leader. So he was leading, I think, 15 soldiers that manned four of those M1 A1 battle tanks, right? So I think they were off at a field training exercise in, I think it was Fort Irwin, California. So it was basically war games with, you know, fake weapons, but real tanks, right? So it's basically a game of laser tag, you know, with these tanks, right? And I think it's one of those, you know, 10-mile long and 5-mile wide training fields. And they literally were going to have 400 tanks on this side and 400 on this side go into the simulated battle. And Mike, it turned out, was leading the first tank out of all 400 on his side of the field. So of course, the night before he had to sit down with a commanding officer and look at, you know, the map of the land and figure out a battle strategy and where they're going to turn and take up position to have the best odds of winning the battle. And so then it starts the next day and all 400 tanks, you know, they start racing out onto the field with Mike's tank in the lead. And they get, I don't know, 3 or 4 minutes into it. And he gets to a point where he's got to decide to go left or right down one of these two passes. And he can't remember which way to go because, of course, a battlefield looks different through the opening in the hatch than it does on a map in a conference room, right? Especially when you're going 30 miles an hour and people are shooting at you. So he's got a decision to make. He can either stop the tank, turn on the light, get out the map, figure out the right way to go, and it might take him 30 seconds or something, and make the right decision. Or he can just make a decision. He can guess, basically. Well, Mike chose option two. And he yells out, "Driver, go left," not really knowing if that was the right answer or not. So the driver turns left. So the tank number two, of course, turns left and follows him. Tank number three, and you know, so they all start going left. Well, a few seconds after that turn, the little whoopee light on top of his tank starts flashing, which means you got shot by a laser, you're dead, right? So he has to stop the tank, pop the hatch, they get out, and they're done for the rest of the day, right? They have to sit out there and just watch all the fun happen. Well, of course, you know, a few seconds later, tank number two, they're dead. Tank number three, they're dead. But tank number four saw three tanks turn left and get shot. So tank and realized that was the wrong decision. So tank number four turns right. And then 396 other tanks turned right and went the proper direction, took up a better position and won the battle. Now, Mike made a terrible mistake, but what he learned from that was that sometimes it is better to make the wrong decision quickly then make the right decision slowly. Because if you make the wrong decision, probably life is going to let you know that you made the wrong decision and you can adjust, right? And so it's better to have won the battle than Because if he'd stopped, then there are 400 tanks behind him that would have stopped, and they're all subject to enemy fire, right? So as a result, he's a much more decisive leader today, but he's also more forgiving of mistakes as long as you learn from the mistake, right? Which he did. So you can, a leader could tell that story, and then people would know that, gosh, sometimes I do need to be more decisive and figure things out later, as opposed to just being told, you know, here's what I've learned in my career. That's not even a story. The story that Mike has is an example of a story that would teach the same lesson, but teach it much, much better.
I love that. I mean, what a great story, first of all. And there's that kind of show, don't tell thing. And I'm thinking of all the times I've just said things like that, of like, oh, you know, I need to be tolerant of a subordinate's mistake, that's like so flat. It's like you forget that so quickly. But like that story, there's different, it's like Inception. You're like planting these seeds in our brain. And like, you know, the person, when you're telling the story, I'm visualizing myself there. Like so much more of that's ingrained. I can see how I would be so much more likely to remember that and the lesson, which I love how you package that, more than just telling someone what, you know, what to do or what the takeaway was without the journey getting there.
Right. Yeah. And the good thing is about your audience is all of, you can't go through a military experience and not have dozens of stories like that. Right. So, and that's why, you know, former military folks tend to make great leaders in outside the militaries because of those experiences. So share those experiences with your people so that they can learn the lessons you learned vicariously, instead of just telling them what you learned. Like you said, show them what you learned.
I love that. Do you have any thoughts on, let me back up just, you know, to talk about the different books you've written, and you do so much of this work with companies. Do you think of this in terms of like categories of stories, like storytelling as a parent or things like that? Or how do you even start to think about the buckets of work that you do and kind of help that you provide?
Yeah. So the main thing I'm teaching people is how to craft these stories. So I talk them through the 8 questions that you and I just talked about. That's how you structure the story. I teach them techniques in storytelling to create more emotional engagement. I teach them techniques. There are several techniques to create the surprise ending that we just talked about. So I'm teaching them that. But that's the same. What's different is what stories do they need to tell? So if I'm talking to a parenting group, for example, which doesn't happen a lot, but occasionally, you know, there are different stories you need to tell your kids. If I'm talking to a leadership group, they need to tell stories, you know, about setting a vision for the future, or you know, leading change, or getting people to be more collaborative, or getting people to be more passionate about their job. If I'm talking to a sales and marketing group, they need to be telling stories about the product that they're selling and what the problem people have that their product solves, or how they're different from their competitors. So the type of story, we spend a little bit of time early on figuring out what is my objective and which type of stories can serve that objective for me. And then once they figure that out, now let's talk about how to craft those stories. And the crafting of it, the methods are the same, but the type of story depends on who the audience is and what their objectives are.
That's great. Just out of curiosity, as a father of a 7-month-old, what are some of the stories that come up with parenting, or like the types of stories people want to tell?
Yeah, so it's mostly character building stories. So that's the whole subject of my second book, which is Parenting with a Story. It's basically 23 different character traits that most parents want to teach their kids, like from, you know, integrity to hard work to being fair and resourcefulness and patience and kindness and grit and determination and curiosity. You know, if you made a list of the character traits you wanted your kid to have, it would probably be on this list. And the stories parents need to tell their kids are stories that help the child learn that character trait without being told. Again, the same philosophy. Don't just tell your kids you should be honest or you should be hardworking. Tell them a story about when you weren't honest and weren't hardworking and suffered the consequences of it. And then they will learn vicariously, oh, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do what dad did. I want to do what mom did, you know, or whatever. Or yeah, and you can tell them success stories as well, but letting them learn from your experience is the whole point behind teaching character through stories.
That's so phenomenal. I'm thinking, like, I remember so well, so vividly, the stories that I heard from my parents and my family growing up. And my guess is, like most stories I've told, it was a story without really a purpose behind it. And viewed through that lens, I can see why that book would be so powerful, of like actually setting an intention of like, these are the values I want to pass on to my children or team or whatever it is, and literally crafting those stories of showing times that I was resilient or not resilient and the impact of that. I just think that that's a very inspiring example of like the worthiness. And if there's one thing I think that listeners can agree on, it is like how much we care about our kids and how much we want to give them a better life. And so I love that, putting the power of your structure behind that and thinking like, hey, it's worth putting together these stories. It may seem artificial, but it may be worth thinking through how to communicate this character trait very succinctly through this method.
Yeah, well said. The thing I'd add to that is that none of us has enough stories on our own to teach all the lessons to our kids that we want or to lead our organizations at work. And that's part of the reason why I put together these books, the first one for leaders and the second one for parents and the third one for salespeople, is so that they would have a collection of, you know, 100 stories that they could tell. And so, because what I did was I just went around and interviewed hundreds and hundreds of people around the world in 25 different countries, looking for the best stories I could about each of those character traits for kids, or each of those leadership challenges for leaders, or each of the needs for sales and marketing people, so that you would have a collection of stories to draw on, so that you didn't have to only rely on your own memory of things that happened to you in the past. Because the truth is, you've got two or three great stories, life lessons that you could pass on in the form of a story, and I've got two or three, but you probably don't have 100. And I think you need hundreds to properly lead an organization or parent a kid. So that was part of the idea.
I love that. You know, I always think, and I think of this in an interview setting for like a job interview, but I think it was Kissinger who had gone into the press conference and said, does anyone have any questions for my answers? And I love that, because, you know, what I learned in business school about interviewing is there's no chance here. Like, I walk in and I've got my five buttoned up, well-rehearsed stories designed to be able to impart some sort of lesson. And when they ask a question, I'm just thinking through which of my stories best, you know, illustrates whatever they're asking. And so what I love about your books is the thought of having these stories in your hip pocket, having them ready. Like, we don't have the time or energy or mental capacity to come up with these things on the fly. So if we care about them, having them packaged up and ready to go. And I was curious about, like, one of your books, The 10 Stories Great Leaders Tell. I'd love to learn a little bit, or for listeners to learn a little bit more about this, but also this importance of having stories ready at a moment's notice as a leader.
Yeah. So let me answer that second one first about having these stories in your hip pocket. Exactly. And probably more eloquently said, I tend to refer to it as your repertoire of stories, or sometimes I refer to it as arrows in your quiver. You need to have lots of them ready at a moment's notice. And so you can't just rely on your own history for that. You need to collect them. And I literally collect them, you know, I write them out in, you know, Microsoft Word files, so that I have, you know, hundreds and hundreds of stories that I can go remind myself of. Now, you don't have to do that. If you got a good memory, you don't need to, but documenting them is a good idea. Just like we document everything important in the world today, stories should be one of them. As for your first question about this, so the most recent book is The 10 Stories Great Leaders Tell. And the reason for writing that is really just because throughout the other three books, I've covered, I think, 70 different types of stories. And I'll admit that's a lot and not very focused. So I challenged myself to pick the 10 most important stories that I think any leader needs to be able to tell. So in fact, I'll share the list with you if you're interested. And I think I see your head nodding there, so I'm going to go ahead and do that.
I'm on mute, but yeah, I'm all in.
Yeah. So the first four kind of go together because they're about setting direction for the organization. So that's where we came from. That's a founding story. Why we can't stay there, a case for change story. where we're going, a vision story, and how we're going to get there, which is a strategy story. So I think if a leader can tell those four stories, they're much more likely to get the organization to go where you need them to go, because you can articulate where we've been, where we're going, how we're going to get there, et cetera. Now, the next four kind of go together as well, but they're more about who we are as an organization. So that's what we believe, a corporate values story, who we serve, a sales story, classical sales story, what we do for our customers. That's the sales story. The who we serve is more of introducing your audience to your customers so they know who it is we work for. Then what we do for our customers, that's more of a sales story. Then the eighth one is how we're different from our competitors. So that's, I call that a marketing story, because marketing is more about differentiating yourself from your competitors. So if a leader can articulate those four things, they basically know how to explain who we are, what we do, who we do it for, and how we're different from our competitors, right? If you're a leader of an organization and you can't articulate that well, you really don't know what you're doing. And then the last two are more personal. They're why I lead the way I do, a personal leadership philosophy story. So that's like the Mike Figliolo story I told you earlier, the leadership philosophy story. And then the last one is why you should want to work here. So that's a recruiting story, because every leader needs to get good people to come work for them and stay and follow their leadership. So those are the 10 that I think all leaders need to be able to tell. And what I try and do in the book is I give an example of each of those 10 and then some tips for how you can craft your own.
The two things get me really excited as you share this is I know from my experience, and I'm guessing the vast majority of our listeners, we have used these stories in the military in some way without knowing it. Like we have been in situations where maybe you're in charge of a division and you're trying to do a turnaround and you tell the story of like where you're coming from or where you're going or why we can't stay here. So I hope that listeners get excited about this too, because it's like, look, you've likely been doing this without even knowing you're doing this. But at least for me, when I hear the structure, it starts to get the wheels turning of how I can, rather than through luck and practice delivering these things, how I can actually, in a concentrated fashion, get better at it. And then the other thing that comes up is that last one of like why you should join our organization. For people who are still in the military, that is probably the one story you've never had to tell, because you've never had to attract talent. At least in my experience, I dealt with who I had and I couldn't get rid of people or bring on new people. So realize that that's a story you're going to need to develop. That's one of those things you've never had to deal with in the military, likely.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you said, you need to have these ready to go when it's time. It's too late. When the moment's gone, it's too late to go figure them out. So think of them ahead of time. And I think, like you said, many leaders, especially military vets, probably tell some of these almost accidentally or unintentionally or just naturally. But once you study them, you realize, oh, I've been telling number three and number seven. I've been telling that my whole career. But now there are eight more that I need to tell that I haven't been telling. And so now you can more purposefully go develop those.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like this tactical precision. I picture like a surgeon's knife of like really being able to choose, first of all, build the tool set and then choose the right tool for the job. And I love what you had said earlier too. It's like realizing the stories don't need to just come from us. You can borrow those stories and kind of, hey, this friend of mine, or I read about this person or whatever it is, it doesn't have to be like my own experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
I always like to ask about resources. And of course, we'll list all of your books in the show notes for this episode at beyondtheuniform.org. With those, or in addition to those, are there any podcasts, books, conferences, movies, videos that you would recommend to listeners?
Yeah, you know, a couple of things. I do try and put everything that's important into those books. So my best thinking about storytelling for leaders is in those books. I do also do a podcast like you do every week. And the purpose of that is not to teach people how to be better storytellers, but just to share an interesting story every week. So I often have some other leader, executive, or author on the show to share one story and the lesson that they learned from that story. So for people that want to add to their repertoire, the size of their hip pocket with those stories in it, if you want to add a story a week, please lead with a story is the name of that podcast. The other thing I would recommend is, and we touched on this a little bit earlier, but begin to build your repertoire of stories by creating a wish list, right? So write down, like, say, here's a list of the 10 stories, you know, that I just went through. That could be your starting list of, I wish I had these 10 stories. But again, you need hundreds. So start with a list of the type of stories you wish you had, and then go find them one at a time. Go interview other people and ask them, hey, do you have any stories that might convince people to want to come and work here? Hey, do you have any stories that really explains on a more human level how our product is different than our competitors? Hey, do you have any stories about, you know, so if you don't have a list of stories you want, it's going to be harder for you to develop your repertoire of them. So make a list and go find them.
I love the, I haven't listened to your podcast yet, but I definitely will. I love the premise. I think that me and most people on the planet were so drawn to stories. It's like the adult, the child in us that wants story time. And I love that thought of, like, less than using that for instruction. It's more of providing the examples that impart wisdom too. I think that's great. I know we're towards the end of our time. I always like to leave the last question open-ended, and you can take that either as, what have we not covered that you'd like to share, or what are just some final words of wisdom that you'd like to leave with listeners?
Well, I guess I'd say, treat your storytelling skills like you would any other skill set that you need as a leader, and meaning take it seriously and go study it and get better at it, as opposed to just leaving it to, like you said earlier, winging it or thinking I'll never be any good at it. I would challenge you to think of storytelling as one of the most important skill sets you'll have as a leader. You know, being clear thinking and being decisive are certainly parts of being a good leader, but being able to tell a good story is really important. Go study it for real. Even if you don't study it by reading my books or taking my classes, go find some way to learn this skill set, and I think you'll be a much better leader.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. And again, for listeners, at beyondtheuniform.org, we'll have show notes that list links to all of your books, all of to your podcast, and all the things that we discussed. But I really appreciate your time and advice today.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Quick couple admin points. We release brand new episodes every single Monday and Thursday. Those are usually recorded about a month or so before they go live. Every Monday and Thursday, we have an interview, usually almost always with a military veteran about their civilian career. More and more, we're starting to add in experts who may not be veterans, but may have some expertise that will help the military veteran community. Saturdays, I typically post more of a behind the scenes episode, which is a free form format. I try to use what I'm calling a mullet format. And by that, I mean business up front, party in the back, talking through admin points, professional topics related to the podcast. It might be a conversation I had that week. It might have been an interview I had that week, but just trying to share things that are top of mind that may help you in more of a free form, straight from the heart format. And then the party in the back is the personal side of things, just kind of more free-flowing thoughts on life, on improving oneself, just kind of whatever's going on in life and trying to be authentic and honest about those things as well. Special thanks. We have an all-volunteer army of people behind Beyond the Uniform making this possible. We do this on our lunch breaks, on our evenings, on our weekends, because we love the military community. We want to give back. We want to make a difference. We want that as part of the purpose in our life that we valued in the military. So special thanks to Steve Bain. Steve does pretty much everything. He helps secure guests. He does our newsletter. He keeps the reels rolling and keeps me sane. Kathleen Dillon, the first person to join our team. She writes text transcripts of every single episode. It's wild. She keeps up with two of these a week despite a demanding career and education right now. But those transcripts help us get more SEO value, helps her audience more. Andrew Woolridge is our data guru. He helps us understand the numbers, which is the easiest way for us to figure out how we can better support you, and adds kind of the data oversight for that. Rick Healy does all of our social media. He is gaining more and more of an audience for us by getting our videos, getting our podcasts out on social channels. The best way to stay in contact with us is if you go to beyondtheinformed.org, there is a newsletter. You'll have a little pop-up that comes up. You can put your email in. We email twice per month. We try to be respectful, but it is a great way to get appraised of upcoming events, upcoming interviews, promos where companies are giving discounts to Beyond the Uniform listeners, and more. This does cost money to put on. We are committed to not charging veterans directly. And the way that we kind of offset costs is through corporate sponsors. So if you know of a company that would like to get in front of a military audience and their families, that's one way that we can both add value to our members, but also offset the costs of Beyond the Uniform and give us a little bit of budget to start expanding what we're doing. So that's the best way you can help us. If that's not something that you can do, a positive review on iTunes is greatly appreciated. Have a wonderful week. We will be back Monday, Thursday, and Saturday with more interviews. And keep up the listening. Take care.